Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, currently based in Los Angeles, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and rural emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to TrueLearn and Picmonic, our sponsors. Picmonic is a visual mnemonic learning tool that's been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams. It uses audio-visual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms that really help with long-term retention while studying. It is an excellent learning resource and study aid for OT and OTA students. Picmonic has built a better way for students to prepare for tests, whether you're studying for classes or getting ready for the NVCOT exam. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes and using the code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off of your Picmonic membership. Happy studying! Welcome back, OT friends. In today's episode, I would like to introduce you to Dr. Karen Kepner, PhD OTRL. Karen is an occupational therapist who works in higher education, in the traditional sense and the non-traditional sense. She is currently an associate professor and the doctoral capstone coordinator for the occupational therapy doctorate program at Cleveland State University. She frequently works with individuals who are at risk for dropping out of post-secondary studies. In the last few years, she has developed a credit-bearing skill-building course for students returning to campus following a medical withdrawal, introduced occupational therapy as a service on campus, and provided direct occupational therapy services to undergraduate and graduate students referred by the Office of Disability Services. She also works with aged-out foster youth, addressing exposure gaps they experience as they transition from adolescence to adults. As a faculty member, she advocates for inclusive teaching practices and addressing systematic barriers that hinder student success. So without further ado, to tell us more about all of her OT work, I'd like to present to you Dr. Karen Kepner.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
We're so excited to hear about your two different roles in the same institution, basically in the same university, right? And I think that's kind of what makes your role as an occupational therapist there a bit uncommon. So I want to hear more about the details of, you know, that particular work that you do. But before we get to all of that, I'd love for you just to tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe some of your favorite occupations.
Okay. Yeah, I'm an associate professor and the doctoral capstone coordinator at Cleveland State University right now, and I've been here for about 12 years now as a faculty member. I've started working clinically as an OT on campus. I mean, really heavily, probably since the pandemic started, as student needs had increased. As an OT, I've been an OT since 1999 now, and I've worked in, I mean, I always tell people I feel like I've worked everywhere. I've worked in the school system, I worked in hands, I worked in the hospital, home care, and I worked for a PACE program, which was probably one of my favorite jobs. It was a community, it's a federal program, but it's for older adults who want to age in place, and so that was one of my favorite jobs as an OT. My favorite occupations, I like to travel a lot. I tend to travel a lot, and I like to explore new places, even within my own environment, you know, trying to find something new to do every weekend, spending time with family. I like to read a lot too. I read a lot for work, but I also like to read like books for pleasure, if, you know, when I have time.
Well, thanks for sharing some of that. It sounds like you and I have been practicing for kind of around the same amount of time. 1999
It's
was
a
a
good
significant
year.
year for me. Yeah. So, can you share with us, Karen, what motivated you to contribute to our podcast here?
Well, the work that I've been doing, I do a lot of research on OT's role servicing students who are in post-secondary settings. And I think it's one of these areas where I don't know why more OTs aren't involved. I mean, I have my own theories about how OTs haven't really evolved into this area, but I felt like it was a good place to share the message and get people who maybe are looking for a change some ideas about what they could do in the OT world.
Yes, and that's exactly why I invited you on. Most folks think of OTs who work in universities or in academic settings or in higher education to be part of faculty, right? Or to be field work coordinator, perhaps, or part of the sort of, research support team. However, your position is and your role is slightly different. So this might be a really good time for us to segue into that. Do you mind describing for our listeners the uncommon OT work that you do there at Cleveland State?
Yeah, so I've done, a handful of different things and always with a focus on improving the lives of college students. And the more I work with college students, the more I kind of develop into more of an advocate for OT and how many different things OTs can do in the setting. But I have my original work was just really providing short-term, kind of like a handful of sessions of helping students look at their habits and, and improving their healthy habits. So like sleep, leisure and social participation, but doing it in a healthy way and making sure that they're, have a balanced life. And it kind of evolved around the pandemic time. It really evolved when the pandemic hit at our university. I had a kind of the right person at the right time, our director of disability services. I had met her maybe 6 to 9 months before the pandemic hit, and I told her some of my ideas, stuff that I had wanted to implement. And we said, okay, yeah, let's see what we can do about it. The pandemic hit, and then it was like, hey, Karen, can you help us out here? So that was kind of perfect timing because I had had a course designed, and it was a course that expanded on the short-term group program that I had put together, but made it a semester-long course, and it was credit-bearing. And so looking at healthy habits, and then we added in a lot of stuff on like academic stuff, like time management, prioritization, how to manage your personal life with academics. But it ended up being geared, and it really worked well because there were a lot of students who had taken either withdrew from school, had a medical withdrawal or some other kind of withdrawal, and or students who were either at risk of being put on probation or on probation. So it was a way for the students to get some credit for work. And we did add like an academic piece to it and a lot of occupational science concepts in there. So looking at the science of sleep and habits and all this stuff so that they actually could understand why we were doing the groups that we were doing. So that was around the pandemic time, and that's still been running, in different variations since then now. But we have gotten referrals from our crisis management team. We get referrals from our counseling center and a lot of students from our disability services. It also then morphed into a level one practicum experience for some of our students. So we don't take a lot of students over there. Although the first year we did it, we had a lot, and then we decided it just wasn't right. Now we do about 2 students per semester, and the 2 students will see a handful of students in the disability services. They're supervised by an OT staff member that we have in our program. And so they provide one-on-one services to students in the disability services, and that's really been well received as well.
And in those one-on-one sessions, do they also address similar things to the course, like time management, habit formation, and such?
Yeah, it's a lot of similar things. I mean, it depends on what the students' concerns are. I mean, we've had some. I think the most fascinating part of the students we've been seeing is we had a I w had a chance to work with a few law students who, in their own right, they're very smart people, But they, you know, some of them had had or got a new diagnosis of ADHD, and so they needed to learn how to manage like this sheer volume of work in law school in this very competitive environment, and then also still have like these this personal life outside of work or outside of school. And so some of those were like one of the women I remember working with, she was just super overwhelmed. She was mostly concerned about her home life and how she didn't feel like she was being a good wife. And so she was talking about how she would leave the clothes in the washer. And, you know, so we decided we worked together on getting some strategies for her to like change her environment a little bit, to give herself reminders, you know, leave the basket at the top of the stairs, you know, to remind yourself that you put the laundry in the laundry in the washer. And so she was fun because it really wasn't as much about the academics as it was about the other stuff that she needed to manage.
I really love this approach. And, as you're giving us these examples, like ding, 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 right? Like, why aren't there more OTs working in universities? Obviously, these struggles and these issues are getting in the way of these students' occupational performance, right? The course, the brilliant course that you've developed is really addressing all of those things that really get in the way. And I think a lot of times too, this was such a long time ago for me, but being a young college student and kind of being expected to have it all figured out and all the pressures that are involved with all of that, on top of not having good executive functioning, and coupled together, the stress and the just poor organization skills or poor planning skills can really, set someone back in their academic, path, right? And
And I
add more
think,
stress.
yeah, and I feel like the OT approach works really well because I work a lot with the foster youth on campus, and they're done with counseling and psychology, like that talk-based therapy. I mean, they could use it, but the practical approach of OT, I think, is really appealing to a lot of students because there's not a stigma involved to it either. You know, they're not always identifying themselves at disability services. They find that, you know, the things that we do are pretty practical. And I think the approach works.
I love that this support is available to at least the Cleveland State students for now. But what inspired you or drew you to do this type of work? I know you're part of faculty there, but what inspired you to sort of branch out in this way?
I would probably say the first thing was that before I was an OT, I really wanted to be a high school math teacher. Well, I didn't necessarily really want to be a high school math teacher, but if I didn't get into OT school, I was going to be a high school math teacher because I like that age range and I do really like math. So it kind of bring me back to that age range that I really like. I also, when I was in, I worked in the Cleveland schools for a number of years, and you know, when I was there, I don't think I had as much insight into it as now looking back. But when I was there and I would be assigned to a high school, I would go into the high school and I'd always be put into the class with the kids who had a lot of, you know, a lot of disabilities and, you know, a lot of difficulty. And I really struggled a lot with how to help them. And then, you know, I would see other kids on campus that the teachers would help, but there was always seemed to be something missing. And at the time, I don't even think I like was like, oh yeah, they could really use OT. But now looking back, I'm like, gosh, why were OTs really not accepted, and why is there no referral process? Where I feel like if there was more of a referral process as kids are transitioning, you know, middle school, high school into college, then OT would maybe make more sense to a lot of people. So that other experience, where now that I look back, I think to myself, gosh, we really should be more involved, because even though all my coworkers that I worked with, a lot of them, you kind of would, you know, discharge students when they got to be, you know, fifth, sixth grade. You know, it just a lot of, you know, we did a lot of work in the preschool, a lot of work in those early years. And then it just, there was this decision process, and we would, you know, let go of a lot of kids. But some of those kids might have actually still needed services. And now that I've become a little more knowledgeable about it, and I've talked to a lot of transition coordinators, that there's a lot of kids who would never even be referred for OT in the high school, but really could benefit from OT.
Because I mean, they have different needs at that age. They have different needs at that point of their lives, right? And those
Yeah.
are also different roles that these individuals have. So, oh gosh, okay. So I know you talked about COVID happening and that possibly could have been a contributing factor in how sort of the service got going in terms of, oh gosh, the need became very obvious for the students, right? And there needed to be some kind of service to address that need. But how were you able to branch into this kind of uncommon, you know, OT role that you have in the university? I know you talked about speaking with a dean or someone else at the university. Can you share
Yeah, I mean,
with us?
I mean, I'll be pretty honest, like it took a lot of work. I mean, I probably circled around the university to all the people I thought were kind of key players who can make decisions or would have, you know, maybe a need for OT. And it was years in the making before the pandemic. You know, I would talk to people in disability and counseling, and I talked to people in OIE, like off institutional equity, the dean's office, and trying to kind of make my case. And I would get a lot of, oh yeah, we probably have a lot of students who can have the need, but we don't have money. You know, how are we going to pay for you? You know, and it was a lot of, you know, gosh, if they just could like see what we do, and you know, they would see that there was, that we would add value, but there wasn't enough research out there. So that was also why it was nice that I was in my role, because I could do some small things and then collect data and share it. So there's even stuff like I have some papers, you know, publications out, but I was tracking a lot of outcomes data. And so as I collected outcomes data, I was able to share that with people at CSU and say, listen, you know, I've done this with students, and this is, look at their GPAs, you know, this, look at their graduation rates after they participated in this, and look at, you know, the amount of time we spent versus the learning specialist. So, you know, there's been different metrics that I've been using. And I mean, it's definitely still a struggle, I'll put it that way, but it's, you know, slow. Talking to the right people, getting the right people interested. And then, you know, then you let other people speak for you. You know, our director of disability services was the one who kind of fought for a lot of then other stuff. So when we had extra CARES funding, she had hired an OT part-time with some CARES funding, which it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't started there, you know, but she was, but then she also had the decision-making power that she could say, oh, we have this money, let's hire an OT. I see your value. And, you know, let's get an OT in here. Cause she also knew that my time was limited and what I could do.
So is that the OT who is currently supervising the level ones?
No, now it's different. So we've had a kind of, we've had a morph a little bit depending on, I mean, who's in the right, who's, what positions people are playing, where we're getting funding from. It's really been, I mean, university environments, I think, are very political. There's a lot of funding issues. And so you're kind of competing for funding. But yeah, no, it's not the same person, but we've made it work.
Okay. Well, I guess that's the important part, right? Again, the value has been established and the need has been established, and there's sort of a way to address that need, and it's through this internship program. And I think, you know, that's a brilliant approach and a brilliant model.
And I mean, it's just really kind of trying to think of how to fit ourselves into, like, when one door kind of closed, it was like, okay, well, let's try it a different way.
Got it. Well, I really hope that, you know, after this episode, we'll get some folks really kind of understand how, you know, this can be done also within their own universities, right? I'm hoping other OTs in academia will also, just be inspired and see what they can do about it in their spaces. So thanks so much for describing for us, you know, a little bit about your path and how this, you know, you, this came to be. Can you give us a little glimpse on a, maybe like a typical day in that role or a typical session that you might have? I know you talked a little bit about the course too, and maybe some of the needs that you're addressing and some goals that you're working on with some of these students.
Yeah, I mean, probably like the examples that are closest to my mind are from this, because we're still in the summer, the summer orientation sessions I do with the foster youth on campus. So I take the foster youth have aged out of care, and we work with them in the summer semester. And I see them, it's like an intensive, I mean, I'd say like an intensive group experience. We meet every day for, it's about 3 weeks almost. And so, I mean, we don't meet all day, but we meet a few hours every day for about 3 weeks. And I do groups with them. And I mean, it follows this similar format. You know, we look at habits, we talk about how they're going to manage their academics, but then also, you know, managing their healthy behaviors, you know, looking a little bit at nutrition and how all that influences their academics. We do some organization, like how they're going to organize themselves. I luck out with the foster youth because that what how I get paid for that is through grant funding. So we actually I can kind of get supplies I need to. So like I get them little planners and we start, you know, I help them fill out their planners and we talk about where they should be leaving their planners, what how they should set up their workspace to, you know, to get really good work in. One of the probably one of the most fun, and the students thought it was super fun too, is we do like an Iron Chef challenge in this
Oh, how
as a group.
fun.
So we talk about, you know, healthy eating, we talk about eating well on a budget, we talk about what you can find in the cafeteria versus like what you can find because our campus is urban. And so like when I say, well, where do you get extra food if it's the cafeteria is not open, what options do you have? And they're like, well, fast food. And I'm like, well, what can you have available in your dorm space, and you know, so you can make something that's maybe a little more healthy. So we talk a lot about healthy eating and how you can, you know, set up your environments to be to allow yourself to be a little healthier. And then I this year I brought in what I have avocados, I brought tortillas, cheese, tomatoes. What else did I bring? One other thing, but then they had to kind of make their own concoction out of the ingredients. And then we presented them and we voted on them and they liked it a lot.
Oh, that's great.
I was surprised. Hardly any of them liked avocados. I'm like, oh, so I did bring a few avocados home with me.
Okay. Usually those are the ones that go first. But yeah, I guess it's also like palate specific, right? But that's a great idea. I'm gonna borrow that for one of our, we're sort of planning our meal prep, cooking, nutrition group. So I think that's a great way to kick it off.
Yeah, it makes it fun.
Yeah, it really does. So thanks for sharing some of those some of the things that you work on, right? And kind of explain a little bit how you address some of those. Can you think of any specific OT skills that really come into play that you utilize in this role?
I would say, I mean, probably a lot of mental health OT. You know, a lot of students are stressed out. I mean, the foster youth in particular have a lot of trauma. You know, they have, you know, just a different experience going into college and, you know, not having the normal supports. So really thinking of ways that you can help them manage their own mental health. I know, I'm trying to think what else. I mean, really just, I think the knowledge we have about cognition and how like functional cognition and how executive function influences how they're able to, you know, attend to tasks and sit down and learn and be able to pick up the material and really be able to succeed in the academic work is important. And then I'd say probably the last one is really understanding habit development with you know, because it's such a because it's such a transitional time for, you know, most, you know, all the traditional age college students are in a, you know, already in a developmentally or a developmental phase that's very transitional in nature. And then they're on top of it going to college, which is also a new environment. So kind of understanding all that's involved in that, I think is really important.
Yes, it's so complicated. Just, you know, biological changes and, you know, responsibility changes, right? Like all of those
Yeah. And a
things
lot of
tied in.
pressure. I mean, I think you just mentioned that a little bit ago. I feel like, I mean, I don't remember feeling under that much pressure when I was an 18, 19-year-old. I feel like the world has changed a bit, and some of the students are really feeling pressure by, I have to decide what I'm going to do in life. And, you know, if, you know, it's a struggle for some of them, I think.
Yes, and that's why the support that you provide for this group is just essential. And it's almost an understated, much needed support. I think because it doesn't exist. So, and now that it does, I hope that again, folks follow the model and really kind of see that, okay, this should be a service offered to our students, because most of the likelihood is that they're going through those issues as well.
Yeah, and I've heard some people speak lately who are working, not always, there are OTs working in university settings, but even working outside of a university, but working with college age students, you can still plan sessions around the college environment, going to the campus and, helping the student manage things that might be challenging to them.
Is this, I'm already thinking this can be a private practice, right? A private practice kind of support. Is that something that you've thought of?
I mean, what I think would be really great would be getting parental involvement when the students are in high school, and then being able to be a bridge between high school to college. Like, even if it's kind of a relationship from afar, and you meet with them, in the summer, in all their breaks. And then, keeping a relationship with them, because you'll have known them then for a while. So you develop this relationship, and as they develop, then you can change your focus on like what you're looking at, as they go from being a new college student or being a high school student and kind of getting feeling that they have everything settled, then to going to a college student and maybe struggling the first or second year, helping them through that, and then into their major level coursework. There's different things come up. I mean, I think that would be a really neat way for an OT to make a difference and have kind of this long-standing relationship with students too.
And imagine, OTs working with children who are younger, like let's say junior high school, and then just kind of having that support throughout and through all the different transitions or the many transitions. Good stuff. Really good stuff. Can you talk about some recent successes and maybe some recent challenges that you've had in this role?
I think my favorite success is there was a student who took the course. He was a medical withdrawal the semester before, and this was kind of his pattern. Like he would he I don't recall he had, gosh, now that I don't remember. I think he had depression, or he had some mental illness that would cause him to become have a difficult time. He'd fall out halfway through a semester. And the disability support was having a really hard time figuring out what to do with him. And then they offered the course to him. He took the course, and the last message I got from him was unsolicited, and it's just a funny email. He just wrote, "Great course, by the way," and he put BTW. And so it's just like very brief, like, "Oh, I love your course." But then I talked to the disability service director after that, and she's like, "We have never heard this kid talk so much about something and be so excited about the course and what you guys were doing and how much it helped him." And then he ended up graduating, I think, 2 or 3 semesters after that. So he was, it was kind of neat. I don't think I necessarily contributed completely, but I want to say it was like some level of involvement.
I think you did. You created the course. So you absolutely contributed to it. And again, understanding that there is this need for students at the university, and that can be done in a few different ways, right? And that's happened to how it worked out for this particular student. But how rewarding. Congratulations on
Thanks.
that success. It's those understated ones, right? Like they don't really they're just quiet, and they don't really, they don't really speak so much in certain ways. But then when they start talking about you, when they start really seeing your value, that's when it starts to click for a lot of people. So he shared all of that with the Office of Disabilities.
Yeah, it was kind of nice because I got the call later and like, they were like, he would never say anything. He'd come in, like we knew he'd be struggling, he wouldn't talk. And then, here he just like unsolicited also told them like all the stuff that he felt like was so helpful.
Oh, that's so great. Can you think of any challenges?
The biggest challenge in this setting that I've gone through is just, being able to figuring out who the right person to talk to is to make decisions, figure out who the decision makers and who will advocate for you. Because I think OTs, I mean, we run into that problem a lot, like that no one really knows what we do. And when we're in an uncommon setting, then it's like, oh, my grandma had OT. Why are you here?
Yes.
So, it's just a different. I think a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their head around OTs having such a big toolkit, a toolbox.
Yeah, and how we really, we work with folks in all phases of life. So, yeah, that alone makes it very complicated for people to kind of, even conceptualize, right? But you're doing some great things over there. You are definitely showing the light, right? You're giving great examples, and you're absolutely showing our value. Can you share with us? I know I talked a little bit about this earlier too, just a little bit about salaries now that we're talking about value, right? How are the OT services over there paid for? And you mentioned some grants too. What kinds of creative things did you have to pull off in order to make this happen?
Yeah, so the course itself will run, I mean it's not ideal, but at the moment the course runs based on enrollment. So if we have so many students enroll, then we can hire someone part-time to run it. So they make our credit hour, oh gosh, it's somewhere around $1,000 to two, not to 2,000, $1,000 to $1,200 a credit hour. So we can hire someone. So a lot of people it's that we hire end up being working full-time summer, and then they'll do the course. We'll schedule it around their availability. The other services we have, so even for myself, I get paid through grant funding. It depends on the project I'm doing. It's hard to give a ballpark on it. I would say I probably have a better example of salaries when you're thinking about working on a college setting. I know that I was asked how much an OT would make, and I said, well, in Cleveland, I'm saying, good salary, is at least, maybe 60, 70,000. That'd be a good, starting for a new grad. And then I got the comment back, oh, I thought you guys would be a lot more expensive. And I said, well, no, I mean, we're not psychologists necessarily, because I think they were thinking like psychologists on our campus, I think make a lot more money, or at least, make more than that. And so it was like kind of an eyeball moment or a light bulb moment that, oh, you guys aren't that expensive. But what I found is that some OTs could get themselves into an actual position on campus without it being an OT. So maybe being a director of disability services could be a good role for an OT. And those positions, I think, run probably anywhere between, again, like maybe 50 to 70,000 a year. It just depends what university and what exact role it would be. I mean, it's definitely not on the higher end of the pay scale. I knew someone who was working as a Was she an assistant to the disability services director, or maybe an advisor of some kind, specialist in the department, and she was making maybe 40,000 or 50,000 a year. One thing that I think OTs could also look at is being directors of like wellness services on campus, and those positions probably make a little bit more. It depends on the university, where they get their funding. I just had another thought, but director of disability services, director of wellness, all the universities now have like directors of wellness, it seems.
Or student affairs or something
Yeah,
like
student
that.
affairs. Yeah. Depending on the your experience, like some OTs could have experience. I think one of the things I noticed is that the positions on campus tend to, if you've been like an RA or a GA in your undergrad or GA in your graduate school, the colleges and universities really look at that kind of experience as really positive. So if you were in a sorority or fraternity and you were like an officer, so you really understand university life, I think that that helps. The other thing about these roles that I think, even if you find a role that doesn't pay as much or maybe as much as you're used to as a clinical OT, is that a lot of them will pay for some schooling. So if you go to a university, you could get a tuition reimbursement or some level of tuition to take classes for yourself. You know, so you can earn an extra degree if you're in that stage of life where you're thinking, I want to go for a master's or I want to go for another doctorate or PhD or something. It could really be very advantageous to some people if that's what stage of life you're at.
Yes. And I assume that in some cases, your dependents may also be included in that, especially if you're full time.
Yeah, sometimes a dependent. And I believe that that's a state by state issue. So it's the governor that signs into kind of, it's like a law, like in the state, that whether or not they can offer, especially for the for the public institutions. Yes. And Ohio does, like, so we have, for faculty, we get a certain level. And then I know staff also gets like a certain amount of money, like per year, or you get so much, you get like one degree per person or something like that.
You can't have two, just one.
Yeah.
But these are such great tips, because not all of these jobs are going to be called occupational therapy, right? Or it's not going to call for an occupational therapist necessarily. They may be called director of wellness or student services or whatever, or office, you know, director of the office of disabilities perhaps, right? But you kind of have to read between the lines and look at the responsibilities basically and how.
I mean, it's definitely a creative way to also put together a resume for yourself. Like, you really have to rebrand your OT skills and make them speak to the higher ed environment. I mean, the director of disability services, they'll always say, do you have knowledge of ADA? And of course, every OTA has a knowledge of ADA. It's just, you know, you may forget some of this stuff, but you could easily pick it back up and, you know, apply it to your role there.
Is there, what makes us well-suited for these roles, in your opinion?
I think that we really do have a global perspective on people and like broad thinking. And we do tend to be, you know, good at organizing our time and being creative and, you know, coming up with solutions to problems that not everyone thinks of. I just think we have like a really good mindset that makes us good at those roles.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Are there any common myths or misconceptions about your current role that you want to demystify today?
I do sometimes get a lot of, when I'd say, you know, I focus on OT's role in higher ed, you know, people immediately think of being a faculty member. So I am a faculty member, but at the same time, providing services is sometimes something that people mistake what I'm doing for. I'm trying to think of another.
I think you talked about one earlier, that we're really expensive.
That's a good one, because I don't think that we're as expensive as we could be. I mean, and I do think that if you want to work in a college setting, you could always negotiate that I'm only going to work fall and spring instead of all year. I mean, having a school calendar is actually like kind of nice, having the summers off. So you can always negotiate some other stuff along the way too.
Definitely having summers off is a nice thing. You have shared so much with us already. Can you think of any other career advice for our followers who might be interested in, and just going down the same path?
I think, especially when you're looking at a university, I haven't looked at a lot of different job descriptions recently, other than ones that are in a university or college setting. Look at the preferred qualifications and the minimum qualifications and make sure your resume speaks to those things. Make sure that you're using the words they're using, you know, that you're resume reflects those activities that you've done in your experience. Think about your experiences in college. Like if you have some relevant experience, that's important to put in there. Like if you were a GA or, something, if you did something on campus, like if you were a student government rep or something, it shows that you did have some relevant experience that they're looking for in some of these roles.
Okay.
And then also making sure that I think OTs, they just have to, we really have a good perspective and letting people know that some of the qualifications that are on there, like the one I just said before about ADA, they're going to put it in a way that makes it feel like you don't know enough, but you do know enough. And, just realizing that you have the capability to learn those things, but when you write up your cover letter and your resume, just make sure it reflects like some of your experience and how that is relevant to how you'll transition into a role on campus.
Yeah, and I think even just in our conversation already about how this is a tough transitionary time for these, young adults, right? And having to deal with the transition of biology and the transition of, sort of life happening and needing to move forward, really. Like it's a benchmark time, milestone time, right? So the next phase is going to be different. So knowing that already and our knowledge of humans in general, it's really, yeah, it's again a no-brainer. And I'm just absolutely thrilled that, you were able to you came up with the idea, you came up with a plan, and now that plan is in place, right? And it's actually a viable offering for individuals who are struggling with schooling and, within that role. So I applaud you, Dr. Karen Kepner, for, making that happen. And also for sharing your journey and your story with our listeners. Again, as I said in the beginning, I feel like you're just going to inspire so many who are already working in universities, right? They're really just kind of thinking outside of the box and how else can I apply my OT lens here? So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I really hope that people will find their own path in these settings as well. I do think that OTs can really make a big difference for students on campus.
Yeah, I mean, just look at all the employment possibility for other OTs if every, university out there employed an OT in this capacity.
Yeah, and I would like to plug too. I mean, really, those director positions. I just talked to someone recently who is a director of disability services, and she was able to make some decisions about hiring. And so she's trying to figure out how to write a job description that would encourage an OT to apply. So even though it's not an OT position, it's a way that we could, as OTs, kind of make this grassroots effort into university or college settings.
Yes, and that would make these job postings more appealing, right? If it's speaking to an OT, I think. Oh, this is excellent. So, on that note, if any OTs or future OTs were interested in finding you, connecting with you, is it okay if they do so?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they can be, I always take emails from people. I do try to reply to all my emails. Sometimes if I don't get to you right away, it's not that I'm trying to ignore you. Sometimes I get buried. So feel free to email me. My email is kkeppner@gmail.com. I also am part of a group. It's called OTU. And it was a small group of us who decided that we wanted a place for OTs to network that are interested in this practice area. It's OTU. We call ourselves OTU. And that's free to join. We have webinars about every other month. We have a webinar. The last one we had was a panel about meeting sensory needs on campus. So we try to bring in people who will talk about different aspects of university life, and also people who have different roles. So some people are working on campus. We have a lot of the Irish OTs are in that group, and so they started as a grassroots there, like where they were just working. The few of them were working in a disability services, I believe, and then now there's actually OTs employed at each university in Ireland. So we really look at that model as like, okay, if we could just start doing something similar where people can start seeing our value, then at some point there will be OTs hired on campuses. But so
Oh.
o that's called OTU. And at the moment, I will have to share with you the direct link, Patricia. You
Okay.
can share it with people because we do have a sign up sheet. You can sign up to our mailing list, and we don't send a lot out, but just enough to give you an idea when our next webinar is.
Okay. I love it. I love that you've organized the community of practice. I love that it's international. And I love that there's an OT at every university out there in Ireland. And
Yeah,
I mean, that's
it's
just
great.
incredible. It gave me goosebumps. Yeah, that's just fascinating stuff. And I love that you're connected with them because obviously they know what to do and they know how to make it happen and just having that kind of support. So I love that you've created this space, a networking space, right, for those who are interested. So we will definitely list all of your email, the Google Sheets, because I know I signed up for that too, and make sure that that's available for everyone.
Yeah, great.
So thank you again, Karen, for taking the time to share with us your OT story. Again, no doubt you're going to be inspiring so many, and folks will be in touch.
That's great. Thank you so much, Patricia.
That wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.